Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
Come and take a trip in my rocket ship. We'll have a lovely afternoon. Kiss the world goodbye, and away we fly. Destination moon.
When John Kennedy thought of going to the moon, he didn't say, it's too far to get there. We shouldn't even try. Our people answered his call and rose to the challenge. And today, an American flag still marks the surface of the moon.
Don't you know she heard it on a July afternoon? Heard a man named Armstrong walking on the moon. Heard a man named Armstrong walking on the moon.
Just remember, every time you look up at the moon, I, too, will be looking at a moon. Not the same moon, obviously. That's impossible.
July 20th, 1969. With the whole world watching, American Neil Armstrong bounced down a small set of stairs and stepped onto the moon. More than 700 million people here on Earth were watching it on television in almost every country in the world. It was one of the few times in history that the people on the planet were all united in one wish: the safe visit and return of Apollo 11. I think about the moon landing a lot. Even now, 48 years later, it was probably the greatest technical achievement in human history. I can't say it's something that only Americans could have done, but in all this time, only Americans have been able to do it multiple times while no other nation has sent someone to walk on the lunar surface. We take it for granted now. It's just something that happened. We're taught it along with the rest of our history, like the American Revolution or the Civil War, like Lindbergh flies across the ocean or Dewey beats Truman, Pearl Harbor or Disco Duck. But if you were alive and in Los Angeles on that day and you were listening to the radio, it was just another day. I mean, an exciting day, but it was just real life unfolding in your ears hour by hour. I recently came across some audio on a wonderful website called PastDaily.com, and it included almost an hour and a half of the news from the afternoon of July 20th, 1969 on Los Angeles radio station KNX. Now, obviously, the man on the moon was the biggest story of the day, but back then, there wasn't the wall-to-wall coverage that we're so used to now. So besides the updates from Mission Control in Houston, there was lots of other news going on, and weather and sports to be reported, and I thought it might be fun today to share some of that audio with you along with my commentary.
At KNX News Radio in Los Angeles, AM and FM, it's 20 minutes past 4 o'clock. The temperature now 79 degrees, and we invite you to stay with KNX News Radio at the 1070 spot on your dial for complete coverage of the spectacular Apollo 11 walk on the moon.
KNX has been doing the news in Southern California for a long time, a really long time. The call letters were awarded back in 1922 when the station was only 50 watts. CBS Radio, who still owns the station today for a few more weeks, bought the station in 1936. A few years later, they then bought an FM frequency, which is 93.1, where you hear Jack FM now, and the news was simulcast on the two stations. Now, in that tape we just heard, KNX makes mention of the AM and FM, but so few people had FM radios in 1969 that they didn't even bother giving that frequency out, just the 1070 position on the AM. It's also interesting to me that KNX, like many of the news stations back in the 60s and 70s, played a continuous sound effects tape of a teletype machine every time the microphone was open. Now, a teletype machine is like a big typewriter, and the news comes in, and then you rip the paper off, take it into the studio, and read it. The station had teletype machines. I mean, that's how they got their news from wire services. It's not like they were faking it. They weren't advertising something that wasn't true, but you're hearing a sound effect. You're not hearing the actual machines, just a recording of them. I think it was WINS in New York that was the first station to do that, and then stations all over the country copied them, but there's probably some radio historian listening to this who will correct me if I'm wrong. By the way, I have a funny story about a station that I worked at that involved a teletype machine too, and I'll tell you that at the end of the podcast, but let's get back to 1969 with an update from the network.
Once again to CBS for this late report on Apollo 11.
Apollo update report from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. I'm Neil Strausser, CBS News. We are now 105 hours, 27 minutes into the mission of Apollo 11. And here at the Manned Spacecraft Center, signs mount that Neil Armstrong may become the first man to step on the moon several hours ahead of schedule. Within the hour, Armstrong told Mission Control he proposed opening the lunar module hatch at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That would be about 5 hours ahead of schedule. The last direct word from Mission Control was that there were still a few moments to make the decision, since preparations for EVA, the moonwalk, take about an hour. But the astronaut's physician, Dr. Charles Berry, has reported the crew in good shape and has said he would be happy with an early walk. Another member of the flight team, which has now gone off shift, has indicated the planning is for the moved-up walk. And from the moon, Armstrong says we are go, the commander seeing no need for the rest period originally built into the schedule. I'm Neil Strausser, CBS News, Houston, Apollo update.
So here we are in the late afternoon, West Coast time. The lunar module has already landed on the moon. Now it's nothing but waiting time, with breathless anticipation of that first step. What would Neil Armstrong say when he got out there? Would his foot sink into the moon's surface and then proceed to swallow him whole? I mean, a lot of people were really worried about that. We really didn't know. And you just heard on that tape, it sounds like Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, also in the capsule with him, are just as eager to get on with it as we are. Remember, there's also a third Apollo 11 astronaut, Michael Collins. He's circling above the moon in the command module. And later, back on Earth, he talks about the experience of being on the dark side of the moon, completely cut off from not only the rest of his crew, but from the Earth entirely. I think a lot of people would have been wigged out by that, but he found it peaceful. So you can imagine the fascination with everything Apollo that summer. The men picked for the mission became the most famous people in the world, and we wanted to know everything about them and every detail about the trip. Here, however, is a rather unconvincing to my ears expert addressing what the astronauts would eat in space.
The care and feeding of the astronauts is not an easy task, we know that, especially when their diet of necessity is limited to dehydrated food and chemically treated water. Dr. Malcolm Smith, the chief of food and nutrition at Houston's Manned Spacecraft Center, was asked how he hopes to make the astronauts eat and enjoy it.
I don't know. You can't. Well, you can't design for a particular crew. We try. We've got, for the Apollo 11 crew, for the first time, we got we talked to their wives and asked them what they liked. Men, sometimes I don't know if they really know what they like. Sometimes I think, maybe I'm talking about myself, but I'd rather my wife put it in front of me so I can complain later, you know.
You see what I mean? This guy can't decide what he wants to eat. How is he the guy planning astronaut menus? Thank God for wives. Am I right, fellows, or we'd starve? Okay, KNX will return with more Apollo 11 coverage. But first, what else is going on that afternoon? Well, details were still unfolding of another major news story, a tragic one out of Massachusetts that had just broken the day before. Senator Ted Kennedy had been out late at night driving away from a party with a woman who was not his wife. It did not end well. We were about to learn the name of the town, Chappaquiddick.
Killed in the accident was 28-year-old Mary Jo Kopechne, a former secretary to the late Senator Robert Kennedy. She was the only passenger in the car, which was driven by Senator Edward Kennedy. Police theorize that the accident occurred between midnight and 1 a.m. yesterday morning. Police Chief Arena told me that he was satisfied that there was no negligence on the part of the senator, but that he still had many questions about what happened during the 8 hours that elapsed from the time the accident occurred until Kennedy reported it to police. Ben Silver, CBS News, Fall River, Massachusetts.
So the police chief concluded pretty quickly that Senator Kennedy was not at fault, despite all that time elapsing between the accident and when he turned up, despite there being no test for alcohol or drugs in his system. The young woman was buried within 24 hours of being pulled out of the water, and Kennedy was eventually charged with just leaving the scene of an accident and got 2 months probation. It did not seem to hurt him at home, though. He was reelected to the Senate 7 more times after that, and he was still a U.S. senator when he died in 2009.
The general lull in combat continues into its 5th week in Vietnam. The enemy shelled 27 Allied bases and towns overnight, but damage and casualties are light. 3 Americans were killed and 3 wounded.
Yes, just like today, we had a never-ending war back then, too, with a steady dribble of Americans being killed every day, eventually totaling more than 50,000. Despite the lull being reported that day, the war raged on for another 6 years. Now, here's a fascinating story about a person who was also in the news that day.
2 months and 1 week ago, Sharon Seitz Adams of Los Angeles set sail from Japan to Southern California in an attempt to be the first woman to sail across the Pacific Ocean alone. KNX newsman Walt Hoffman reports.
Although Mrs. Adams, whose husband is a sailing instructor in the Los Angeles area, has not been seen or heard from in 47 days, Al Adams says he is not worried, but he is concerned. Apparently, her radio is not working, or she's too busy with chores to try to make contact. I asked Adams how it is possible she should not have been sighted since June 3rd in mid-Pacific.
She's probably seen many boats, and maybe she's been not quite in range to talk to them, and so we haven't heard. So ships just go by you, and in 1965, 52 yachts went through her in the Transpac race, and not a one of them saw her, nor did she see any one of them.
Right.
The ocean is big and they get scattered.
Okay, I looked it up. Here's an update on Sharon Seitz Adams. She made it. She became the first woman in the world to single-handedly sail the Pacific Ocean from Yokohama, Japan to San Diego. A 6,000-mile voyage took her 75 days, but she did it. So, belated congratulations. Here is another woman that KNX was talking about on July 20th that also has a happy ending.
A 30-year-old mother of two who became lost during a rainstorm as she walked home from a friend's house has been found in fine condition after 26 hours in the desert near Blythe, despite 100-degree temperatures and an attempted attack by coyotes.
You don't hear that pronunciation as much anymore, but it is not uncommon to still hear a coyote story on the news in Southern California. Up next on the afternoon show, this is a report about an architect with some big ideas on how to make airports more efficient. Now listen to this. Even today, these ideas still sound like science fiction. Nothing like any of this has happened in the many decades since 1969. So I can imagine how bonkers it sounded to people who were listening that day.
His concept of multi-layer airport could save lots of land and even more time. It calls for high-rise terminal buildings with huge elevators called mobile lounges that could lift or lower at one time 200 to 250 passengers for a single flight. It also would have dual-layer ramps and runway systems so tall that even the giant Boeing 747s could pass on different levels while taxiing. Takeoff and arrival runway systems would be totally separate. All runways would radiate from high-rise twin but separated arrival and departure terminals in an arc of 180 or even 250 degrees. Planes would take off directly from the loading point without taxiing to another runway.
There was a lot of talk about airline travel in those days because of the new, bigger, more powerful jets that took more and more Americans to more and more places. But unfortunately, for air traffic controllers back then, with more planes in the air every day, their jobs just got busier and more stressful, and there weren't nearly enough new workers being hired. So a strike was planned.
A regional director of the Air Controllers Association says in Los Angeles, when the Apollo 11 mission reaches its conclusion, some 3,000 air controllers will resign their jobs.
I couldn't find anything online to corroborate that the strike did take place that summer, but there were records of air traffic controller sick outs in 1968 and again in 1970. Of course, President Reagan pretty much put an end to strikes in that industry by just firing everyone who walked off the job about 10 years later. All right, there's more moon coverage coming up, but first, time for sports.
Turning now to sports, in Major League Baseball today in the National League, Montreal edged past New York 3-2 in the first game of their scheduled doubleheader.
I love the idea of baseball scores being the constant in any radio broadcast in any city of any year of the 20th century, and almost all of the teams are still around today. The Montreal Expos are not one of them, however. They were a brand new expansion team in their first summer in 1969, and in 2004 they moved to Washington, D.C. to become the Nationals. Since then, we've just had one major league team in Canada, the Blue Jays.
San Diego was blanked by Atlanta 10-0. Chicago shut out Philadelphia 1-0 in the first game of a twin bill. Los Angeles is playing at San Francisco. Meanwhile, Houston at Cincinnati and St. Louis at Pittsburgh were rained out.
Over in the American League, it was Detroit 3, Cleveland 2. Minnesota and Seattle resumed their game, which was suspended by curfew after 16 innings last night with a score of 7-7. The final score today was Minnesota 11, Seattle 7 in 18 innings.
Okay, as a long-suffering Seattle baseball fan, it in no way surprises me that they took 18 innings in 2 days to lose that game. What might surprise you, though, is that the team playing in July of 1969 was not the Mariners. Yes, just like the Expos, Seattle had a new expansion team that year called the Seattle Pilots, and it turned out to be their one and only season in the Pacific Northwest. By opening day 1970, they were in Milwaukee and known as the Brewers. It took 7 long years before Seattle got another team with the Mariners, and 40 years later, they still have never been to a World Series.
Meanwhile, Boston down Baltimore 6-5. In the first game of a doubleheader, it was Kansas City over Chicago 8-6, while New York edged past Washington 3-2 in 11 innings.
Okay, musical chairs continuing there. The Washington team mentioned in 1969 was the Senators. That was an expansion team that had moved to D.C. after the original Washington Senators had moved to Minnesota to become the Twins. The new Senators moved to Texas to become the Rangers in 1972. That franchise had been so bad for so long that a popular slogan had become Washington. First in war, first in peace, last in the American League. I hope you got all that because there will be a quiz later. Now let's move on to a couple of interesting commercials heard in Afternoon Drive that day on KNX. The majority of the ads seemed to be for cars, but there were a few for insurance companies too. Nowadays, the spokespeople are that Flo Lady for Progressive, the president from 24 for Allstate, the guy from Whiplash for Farmers. But in 1969, look who was selling insurance, a legendary TV host and smart guy.
David Frost here. Some people complain about the cold, impersonal world of computerization. They don't know that the State Farm Life Matchmaker Service uses a computer to match your personal needs with a life insurance program you can live with.
Thank you, David Frost. And now check out this ad. I love it. It's very creative from McDonald's, advertising the Big Mac in this ad, which was practically a brand new item on the menu at the time. The Big Mac was just introduced 2 years before this in the greater Pittsburgh area and had only been available nationwide since 1968. But this ad kind of makes me want one.
Hey, this is Sergeant Delbert Carruthers with an EAT alert. The metropolitan Los Angeles area is advised that McDonald's Big Mac hamburgers are creating traffic at all McDonald's units. Motorists with a bigger-than-average appetite are advised not to take an alternate route. I repeat, do not take an alternate route, but go directly to a fast-moving McDonald's and see the Big Mac hamburger. Now, this condition will exist until you order Big Mac and eat your way home. This has been a McDonald's EAT Alert. Go get one.
All right, we're nearing the end of our 90-minute slice of afternoon radio on KNX with this feature story on Hawaii. Many Americans were obsessed with the Hawaiian Islands throughout the 1960s. Hawaii had been a U.S. state for less than 10 years at the time of this broadcast, and one of the most popular primetime shows on CBS then was Hawaii Five-O. So the show that you're watching now is a reboot of that. Here's what was going on that day in Hawaii.
Well, the Honolulu Chamber of Commerce is promoting what's called Aloha Summer. It's a campaign urging business executives to leave their coats and ties at home and wear Hawaiian garb to work. Most bankers and attorneys are resisting the movement, but a growing number of other businessmen are showing up for board meetings in short-sleeved, crazy-colored Aloha shirts. One executive says, "We think a person is much more efficient in a cool, open-collared shirt than in a hot coat and tie. And besides that, it's fun to see the girls at work in their colorful muumuus." But one budget-conscious housewife isn't too happy. She said, "A good Aloha shirt costs $10. I can get my husband a white shirt for half that amount."
KNX goes back to Houston Mission Control with another bulletin. It's the voice of astronaut Edwin Buzz Aldrin. Yeah, the Dancing with the Stars guy with a message from the moon. At this point, Neil Armstrong is still about an hour away from his one small step for man, but Buzz has a message for mankind.
Roger, this is the LEM pilot. I'd like to take this opportunity to ask every person listening in, whoever, wherever they may be, to pause for a moment and contemplate the events of the past few hours, and to give thanks in his or her own way. Over. Roger, Tranquility Base.
Again, thanks to the Gordon Skeen Collection at PassDaily.com for posting this wonderful historical artifact on their site. Next month, on August 21st, 2017, once again, the eyes of the nation will turn toward the moon. Why? Because of the Great American Eclipse, the first total solar eclipse that is only visible in the U.S. and no other country since we had a country. It last happened back in 1776. Now, what is a solar eclipse? This occurs when the moon passes between the sun and the earth. So, for a few minutes, the sun's light is blocked out. It gets dark during the day. The temperature drops about 10 degrees. It feels like biblical end of world times for a minute there. And this historic astronomical event is not going unnoticed. Millions of Americans are planning to travel to within the path of totality so they can see the whole eclipse. Here in New Orleans, where I live, we get to see about 60%, same in Southern California. But there's a swath of land going across the country through 14 states where you get the total solar eclipse experience. I recently heard from a listener of the Kevin and Bean Show who's planning an entire family vacation around seeing this eclipse. And I thought it might be fun to give her a call and see what's up.
Hello.
Hey, Melissa.
Hi, Bean. How are you?
What's up, girlfriend?
Not much. What's up? How's it going?
It's going great for me, and I feel like we are eclipse brethren here because you and I seem to be two of the people who are really into the eclipse fever, but at least on my end, everybody is mocking me for my excitement 3 weeks out.
No one should be mocking you. Everybody that I tell thinks it's cool. They, first of all, don't know what it is or think they've seen it, and they really haven't.
Right.
And it's actually, I'm excited, but my dad is the one who kind of has put this trip together. So I'm representing his nerddom as well as my own.
Now, this is the first total solar eclipse, as I understand it, in the United States since 1979. So it's not like this is something you can skip this time and see next week. It doesn't happen that often.
No, it doesn't. And I don't even know when the next one would even be happening. I think that's why the fever is starting to hit that fever pitch, is that people are figuring out that this is something they really should see this time, because it may not happen again in a lot of our lifetimes.
And you planned ahead. You've had this trip that you emailed me about on the books for a while. It's you're not one of these people who waits till the last minute and then decides to just jump in the car and go off and watch it.
No, my dad actually first brought this up 18 months ago.
No way!
We have talked about this for a year and a half. He said, okay, this was last year. He said, next August, we're going to see the total solar eclipse. And we all were like, okay, Dad, that sounds great. Not thinking it was really going to come to pass. And then as the months went on, we just started to continue planning it. We booked our hotel. We booked our Airbnbs. And then it ended up turning into a week-long adventure,
yeah.
A week-long road trip.
Now, the path of totality is about 70 miles coast-to-coast, starting in Oregon, ending up in South Carolina. So where did you decide to go? Where are you actually going to be at the time of totality?
We are planning to go to Casper, Wyoming, where, if I understand it correctly, and maybe you have more of the facts than I think I do, that is the best place for the clearest view of it. I think there's somewhere in the 80% range that will have the best chance of viewing it, and I believe the longest.
Yes, I think what you're talking about is they've researched the weather in the cities in the path of totality, and they have come up with the conclusion that Casper, Wyoming is the place that is most likely to have clear skies on that calendar date.
And that's where we're going, I think, with many, many other people, if they figure out that fact, yes. I think they're all going to try to come to Casper. So we're staying outside of Casper the night prior in a town called Laramie, and then we're going to get up early and try to get into Casper, because I believe it passes through Casper at 11:54
okay.
Or 44, one of those.
Now, Melissa, yeah. when you talk about a lot of other people, I think this is going to be a story that is going to surprise a lot of people, because there are 12 million Americans who live within the path of totality, but 200 million Americans live within a day's drive. So don't you think, as it gets closer and gets more media coverage, that there are going to be so many people who are going to decide in the last few days or even the day of, hey, I might as well drive down and see some of that. And the traffic jams have the potential to be some of the worst we've ever seen. It's going to look like Woodstock in some of these small towns, having thousands and thousands of people descend upon them.
You know, we've talked about that, and I think that, you know, you can approach it either as, oh my God, all these people are coming, what are we going to do? Or you approach it as, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, let's just, and it's about science, it's about the world, let's get out and go see it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's embrace everybody coming together to see something this cool. And I think that's how we're going to approach it. I mean, it could be just utter chaos trying to get out and get where we're going. But at the end of the day, it's the sky. Just get out wherever you are and look up and you hope for the best.
What's your glasses situation going to be that day?
We have them. My dad already bought them for all of us. We should probably tell everybody to get glasses. Don't look at the sun. You have to get special glasses, and you can get just simple paper glasses.
Yeah, they're very inexpensive. They're available
very
everywhere.
Very inexpensive. Yeah. and definitely be safe
And by the way, what's terrifying is it's not just it hurts. You literally, your eyes can be sunburned. And I just thinking about that gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Oh, it's terrible. Don't do that. Please. People,
Melissa,
don't do that.
I don't know if how much you've heard us talk about this on the Kevin and Bean Show, but my coworkers said essentially they wouldn't even walk outside their house to look up during the eclipse. That's how little interest they have in that. What do you suppose? Please help me diagnose them. How can there be no interest in seeing something like this?
I think people just don't they just don't know how cool it's going to be when it's blacked out. We're going to be in darkness in the middle of the day. Like, that's kind of cool. And I don't think there's any way to explain it to people who maybe aren't kind of astronomy nerds. I don't know. I don't think it's anything you can explain to them until they see it,
right,
or if they even, you know, care to. But I think once it actually happens and the more we hear about it, because I think now with the news coverage and with the advent of social media, I think people are going to be talking about more and more, and maybe people will have a case of FOMO and they won't want to miss it.
You have kids you're taking on this trip, Melissa?
Yes, there are actually 6 adults and my baby, my 18-month-old daughter.
Oh, just a little too young to know what's going on.
Yes, but we think that it's just going to be a great story we can tell her, and we'll have pictures of all of us together doing it. We're actually turning this into a national park kind of sightseeing trip as well. So we're going to show her not only this and be all together, but we're going to go see Mount Rushmore, we're going to see Yellowstone, and we're going to see the Grand Tetons.
That's a
see parts
wonderful
of the country we've never seen.
That's a wonderful trip. That's,
I think so too.
USA, USA,
USA,
USA. Well, I'm excited for August 21st, and I hope you post some pictures, because we're kind of Twitter friends too. So I hope I get a chance to see some of what that looks like from your perspective. I hope you have a safe and wonderful trip and enjoy that eclipse. And thank you so much for talking to me, Melissa. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, you're so welcome, and you're always welcome to come see us in Casper.
Oh, I can't hear
come
you. You're breaking up. Thanks, Melissa.
Well, thank you so much. It's been an honor to talk to you. We're such huge fans.
A lot of fun. Bye, bye, dear.
Bye. Thanks.
All I really, 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 really want to see is a total eclipse of the sun. All I really, 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 really want to see is a total eclipse of the sun.
Thanks again to Melissa for sharing her story with us today. She and her family are traveling from Pasadena, California, nearly 1,100 miles to Casper, Wyoming, to see the Great American Eclipse. All right, before we get out of here, I promised you a story about a teletype machine. And I worked for a lot of my career getting the news through the wire services on a teletype machine. I remember so many specifics. That's how I learned that the Challenger had blown up. I heard the bells going off in the hallway, ding, 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 ding. And you could always tell how big a news event it was based on how much noise the machine made when President Reagan was shot. I remember lots of celebrities dying. One of the popes died. I learned it that way. And one day, very early on in my career, I was working at a little daytime AM radio station called WOHN in Herndon, Virginia, a little 1,000-watt radio station in suburban Washington, D.C. And out in front of the radio station on the 2-lane highway, there was a very serious accident one morning.
Multiple cars were involved. One of them turned upside down. It left the road and ended up in a ditch in front of the radio station. I'll always remember it because the guy was blasting his radio at the time of the accident. And every time I hear Kenny Loggins' version of What a Fool Believes, the song he co-wrote with Michael McDonald and the Doobie Brothers, every time I hear that playing, I always think of the scene of that accident and hearing that music blasting in the aftermath of the crash. Well, one of my coworkers was at the radio station with me that day, and he said, I'm going to call this in to the Associated Press. They need to know about this because this is going to be a traffic problem. Now that we've called 911, emergency services are on the way. They're going to have to block this street off, so I'll let them know. He was a great guy. We're still in touch from time to time all these years later, and his name was Bob Sweeten. So Bob picked up the phone, and he called the Associated Press and said, I'm calling from WOHN. My name is Bob Sweeten. There's a terrible accident. Three or four cars are involved. The street's going to be closed. Police are on the way. I wanted to make sure you know. What's the name again? Bob Sweeten. Radio station? WOHN. Okay, thanks very much. I'm not going to lie, we were kind of excited that we got to be a little tiny part of the news-making experience. We got to call in an eyewitness account, a first-hand experience as to what we'd seen, and now it was going to be delivered all over Northern Virginia to get the word out about the crash. So a few minutes go by, the teletype machine's continuing to do its work with news and sports and weather, and then eventually there's the bulletin about the accident in front of the radio station. Multiple vehicles involved, police and ambulance on scene, possible injury, road closed, detours in place. Thanks to contributor Bib Sweeter. And to this day, I still call my friend Bob Sweeten Bib Sweeter.
Thanks for that
podcast.
Thanks so much once again for taking the time to listen to this edition of the podcast. As always, I welcome your comments. You can email me at bean@krock.com. Call the Kevin and Bean Afro line if you'd rather do that at 323-520-AFRO. And I'm always available on Twitter at Clyde Tumbaugh. Have a great week. Take it away, DJ Omar Khan.
Thanks for that podcast, Bean. Thanks for that podcast, Bean. It's my favorite part of the day. Oh, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Thanks for that podcast, Bean.
Is that the moon?
That's the moon, all right. Where the supposed lunar landing took place in 1969.
The supposed lunar landing.
Do you really think we had the technology in 1969 to get men on the moon and bring them home?
Kinda.
238,000 miles average. 221 at perigee, 252 at apogee.
I do.
A moving target. You think they landed on the moon?
Yeah.
No, they were orbiting around the Earth while they did this all on a soundstage. Where? Area 51.
Oh.
Do you ever see the footage of the men on the moon?
Yeah.
There's an American flag blowing in the wind. Oh, wait, there's no wind on the moon because there's no atmosphere. There should be a crater under the limb. There's no crater. There should be a little crater for when they're landing. What about the star field behind them? There's no stars in the background. Why? They're on a soundstage.
Didn't happen.
We got taken for a ride is what happened.
Is that a city on the moon?
Well, that's on the dark side of the moon. There are people there. Of course, they've been there for thousands of years. There's a whole alien race living there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.